New device, huh?
It is a new device.
Yeah, that's good.
It is good to welcome our speaker for the evening, Kenny Johnson. Speaker many times in this space.
Many.
Author of this awesome book, The Last Hustle, A True
must
Story.
Read. It's a must read.
A must read.
Must
Absolutely.
Must read.
I concur. It is the real deal.
It's the real deal.
Because it talks about starting imagining he was separated from consciousness and awareness, and finding that he was mistaken about that.
Yes, totally.
So we are always in awe of the pleasure that it brings us to host Mr. Johnson here, and no less so tonight. So please welcome me. Join me in welcoming Kenny Johnson.
So we're on. We're live.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. Good to see you. I want to thank Many Rivers for, over the years, of providing a venue for me to share my spiritual experience. I have a number of friends, teachers who speak in different venues, and it's like they're a regular. And I was wondering, when am I going to have my little regular spot, you know? Whereas I know that I can come anytime and share my insights or my spiritual experiences or what I'm learning on this path of never-ending awakening, you know. Is there an end to this? As of yet, I have yet to see an end to what we're talking about, awakening. There's so much to explore and to discover about our universe. I mean, you just take and look at the pictures the Hubble Space Telescope sends back, and you're like, wow, that's out there? And we're right here, you know? It's like, it just humbles you to realize what there is to explore, what we're part of. And what I find that balances all that out, where I don't get too, humble within myself, is that once I have the awakening experience of letting go of the story of Kenny, then I realize how connected I am to this vast universe. But long as I was connected to Kenny, then I was not connected to this vastness. So throughout my day and throughout my week and throughout my month, I'm constantly letting go of Kenny and connecting to the vastness. And so tonight, I know the title is called You Are None of These Things. We might get there some kind of way. I don't know how. But right now, I want to speak about how we go in and out of consciousness. You know, the flow, as we were speaking about earlier, the ebb and the flow, positive and negative, swinging back and forth. How we do that and how we get caught up. You know, how we go see a therapist, we got to see a psychiatrist, we got to get a book, we got to go meditate, we got to do yoga. It's something we have to do what? To reconnect to this vastness. Because if we just go along, walking along, and say, my name is Kenny, pretty soon I'm going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, and my world, I'm going to get more and more attached to my world as Kenny. And that's going to cause a lot of suffering and pain. And then I'm going to have to go do yoga, see a therapist or something. But we don't have to do any of those things to connect to this vastness, but simply stop. Take a breath and let go. And we're here. That's simple. And we forget That's why we have these meetings, to be reminded. I can let go. Then you realize that you are none of these things.
That was quick.
Okay, I see someone is like, what is he talking about? So I like to just go around. I always go around the room and check in with everybody. So it's only eight of us here, so we can have a nice little intimate connection. First of all, young lady, what's your name?
Me. My name is Carol Hannah.
Well, Carol, you can take your jacket off, you know, put the purse, just relax a little bit, because that's relax.
Thanks.
Unless you're going somewhere,
you
know. Yeah, you need permission. There you go. Because you got me sweating up here with all that stuff on. There you go. There we go. Good to see you, Carol.
Thank you.
What brought you here tonight?
Angel told me that you were speaking, and I thought the topic was really interesting. Mm.
Angel. Okay, Angel.
This one.
Okay, Angel. Okay, I know. Kind of felt you were the angel that you were talking about. And Angel, what made you come? You saw it, then what made you say you want to come?
Curiosity.
Mm.
I like the topic.
Mm.
Well, as you said, we may get there and we may not,
right.
And I had never been to a talk here at Many Rivers.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah. So Carol's going to speak at some point, I think in August or something. And
okay.
So I thought this was a perfect night to come down.
Come and check it out. Yeah.
So
do a little scouting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also because I was interested to see, if you were going to talk about your life, or at some point there was something that happened in your life that awakened you.
Yeah, it was. As a matter of fact, it was.
Yeah.
I
you don't have to go there now.
No, but I will, just to bring you up to speed, I went to prison in 1993. I went to prison for the last time. And this, in 1994 is when I met my teacher, Gangaji.
Yeah.
And I had an awakening in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Come. You know, I saw y'all walking down the street about an hour ago. I say, they belong in my socks on. What the hell they doing walking east?
We got here too early.
I know people that belong in my socks on. And that young lady there, what's your name? You. All the way in the back, your lady. Young lady. Your name?
Seringa.
Seringa, that's a good one. Okay, Seringa.
African Savannah Tree. State Flower of Idaho Lilac.
Okay, good. Okay, State Flower of...
Where are you going to go? I don't know.
State Flower of Idaho. I've been to Pocatello, I've been to Boise. Out of those two, I like Pocatello best. Probably a big metropolis now, though. And Seringa, right?
Seringa.
What brought you here?
I got lucky.
You got lucky. How was that? Okay, and why you say that you're lucky, son?
Because I just got lucky.
Mm. Mm. Okay, then we're going to explore this because now you're piquing my interest here. What, how you consider the luck? What is the luck? What is this luck?
Well, my doggies are in the car.
Okay.
And my family's probably wondering where I am.
Okay.
In the bar, and I had too many shots of vodka.
Okay.
And I really felt like this is where I'm supposed to be right now.
Wow. It's so funny. My favorite drink, if I could drink, is what?
Well, vodka.
Oh my God. Ooh wee. Yeah. I say if I want a party, vodka is it. I get me a bam bam and I keep going and keep going. Bam bam, keep going. It's on the night. So, but I don't drink anymore, so there goes my.
I can see that.
Yeah. Alcohol for me was a. I when I started drinking, so I don't know how we get to AA meeting, but here we are. When I started drinking, I was a young kid and I wanted to go to house parties. And so you go to these house parties back. This is in Kansas City.
Oh, you're talking about big old hip hop house parties.
Yeah.
Everything was just. Banging.
Yeah.
Nothing but trouble.
That's right. So what I would do, I would get drunk so I would fit in. And that was the beginning of my drinking, and pretty soon I used alcohol as a way to drop my inhibitions and to come right on and be the life of the party, be one with the party. So now, even today, every now and then I say, but I know what it's going to do to me, so I have to say, Syringa, drink one for me. Because I still love to drink, but I can't. I just can't. Physically, I cannot do it. And psychologically, I cannot do it, because I go over and I keep doing it. Pretty soon, I'm not like you, walk away, come to a cyclone. I would be... What would I be?
If I have an experience, bad things, God.
Yeah, but thank God I have a young message.
With you.
Yeah. But that drinking was a real big one for me. But now, I'm really clean. Used to smoke cigarettes and all that stuff. Really clean. But that was the life I lived in the streets. That was part of it. The drugs, alcohol, the cocaine, that was part of it. And it was a cycle, and I kept going in and out of prison, to where it's out. Here I am, 47 years old. I spent 20-some years in prison, off and on. And I'm like, okay, this is not going on. I can't keep doing this. Something's got to change. That's why I started doing meditation, I started doing yoga, I started reading all these types of spiritual books, about the spiritual teachers, religious books. And I went from religion to spirituality. It's just a natural progression. When you're spending, 10 straight years in prison, you have nothing else to do but read. What do you do? You just progress. Pretty soon I was reading this heavy material by Muktananda, Yogananda, and they were speaking about walking through walls. They were speaking about reading minds. They were speaking about doing these amazing feats, spiritually. And I wanted that because even though the Bible and the Quran and other books speak about it, these yogis and yoginis, they're very clear, they're very precise, like Yogananda buried himself alive for a month it was, just to prove that he could be alive and breathe in a casket, just to prove that that you have control over the breath. It's just a yogic feat. So that was a wow, man. So I really got into the Eastern religion philosophy because of the power that I could gain. And being a man in prison, a woman in prison, you want power because the prison has taken all your power, taken all your manhood, and given you a number. So how do you regain your power? It's through spiritual, through meditation. So I gained power through that. And then to culminate it, I wanted to wake up. I didn't want to go to prison anymore. And then a beautiful woman by the name of Gangaji came into prison who had been to India, and she came and shared her spiritual experience to a group of people like about this many people in prison. And that's when I had my awakening experience, whereas I knew that I would never come into prison again, but how was I going to survive out here in a world that I had never done anything right in? And from the age of 14 on, I was a criminal. So I never really lived a life of responsibility. So how do you do that? There's no books on it. You got to come, you're out, and here you are like, okay, what do I do next? What do I do first? Do I get a job? Do I Do I live here? Do I? What do I do? Do I get a wife? What do I do? How do I do this? Do I go be my spiritual teacher? What do I do? You know, my so first thing you listen to your parole officer. So for 5 years I listened to my parole officer. And I finally got off parole, and then I never lived on a parole. And so my life, after I stress, like tomorrow I'm going to San Bruno County Jail. I'll be talking to about maybe a couple of hundred inmates. And I'm going to share with them that it's possible for them to change their life immediately. It's possible for them to have an awakening experience. Irregardless of their circumstance and situation, they can wake up and realize that they're one with everything, this vastness. So that's what I'll be doing tomorrow. But if it wasn't for Gangaji and people such as yourself who travel around the world, I would not have had this experience. Other inmates would not have had this experience. I would not have written that book so other people can realize it's possible for them to wake up. And so I feel that my life has been a curse at the beginning, and it's a blessing in the end. And so here we are again talking about the negative and the positive. You know, you're saying there's a lot of negative running, but also realize that that negative is necessary. The negativity is necessary. It's just to say, oh, now I know how it feels to be negative. Oh, now I know how it feels to be positive. So let me just hang here in the middle. If I need to be negative, I need to be positive. However, I can swing back and forth, but don't be neither one. Just hang in the middle. How do you hang in the middle? There's no negative nor positive there. They're just this. And this is neither negative or positive, it just is. And your name?
Malika.
Malika. And what brings you tonight?
I get the newsletter online,
mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking for, looking and seeing what's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to hear your story. I was encouraged that Gangaji was a part of your awakening.
Yes, yes, yes.
I was also wondering if I might have some inspiration from your story and just hearing about the difficulties that you've been through and how you used the practice that Gangaji gives us, which is so basic that it's difficult.
Yes.
It's so easy and it's just so hard.
That's right. Yeah.
And
it is,
isn't
it?
It is.
It is.
And I mean, it can be.
It can be. That's right.
It can be because my tendency is to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certain you have had that experience
yourself.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, I knew that there might be a peace, and the evening was warm, and my friend Kalima wanted to walk with me, and it just seemed easy to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. Yeah. Thank you for coming so much, both of you. You know, when I got out of prison, I was for 2 years. I was in this place, this grace period, where I was naturally blessed with bliss. Then I got out and I had to join the society. And then all hell broke loose. Because as I said earlier, how do you do this? How do you hold a job down? How do you pay bills? How do you do this? And so I remember I got out in June, I got out in February 1997, and I moved to Colorado in February 1998, and that's when I was plunged into hell because I moved to Colorado where Gangaji Foundation was located. And up until then, everything was cool. Then all of a sudden, I got like I was thrown into the fire. and I was suffering horribly. And everybody saw me suffering. And they was wondering, what can we do to help him? And then Gangaji saw me doing a weekend retreat. And she came up to me, so she wanted to talk to me specifically, see how I was doing. And she says, I hear you're suffering. And I said, okay, what?
And
she says, okay. She's acknowledged the suffering. You're suffering.
Oh.
And immediately I became okay with the going back and forth, you know, the suffering, the pain, I became okay with that. Oh, okay, I'm suffering.
If she can accept it, you can.
Yeah, I mean, if she accept me suffering, apparently, and so she's been there, done that, and got a T-shirt. So let me just trust that what she's saying is true. And the moment my teacher acknowledged that suffering was okay inside of me, so I've been okay with it. Okay, I'm suffering. Okay, I'm going to do something right now. Okay, how long will this last? I don't know. We'll see. A week, a month. First, it was a long time. Months and months of just treading through mud, slogging through mud. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like quicksand. That's, oh my God. Then, as I learned to accept that this is part of life, it got easier. Then the time frame got shorter. My suffering time frame got shorter. So I don't know how long your suffering periods last, a week, a month, 6 months, a year, whatever, or 6 days, 6 hours, but whatever. The more you accept them and acknowledge them, okay with them, then the shorter they are, the shorter the life, the period is. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. I mean, I've read it.
Right.
I've read it. And I've read about people who've experienced it.
Right.
And you know, another piece too that seems to be very important to me right now is the true understanding of who we are, and that as you know, my thinking is, the more I can embrace the truth, as Gangaji would say, the truth, that these other things that these other parts of me are doing become more acceptable.
That's right. There you go.
This is a piece that I'm very interested in.
Yes, yes.
But right now, it's really only here in the mental realm. I haven't really brought it down into my daily,
understanding.
I still battle. I hide.
Yes.
I make bargains with myself.
Mm.
There's things I don't want people to see.
Yes,
I have shame.
Yes.
And so I see how it is I don't truly love and accept myself. And I know that's the jewel.
That's it.
Is truly embracing all of that, and as I understand it, once you embrace, truly embrace all the parts, you have nothing to hide.
Right,
and that it all just
right.
begins to.
And don't bite off more than you can chew. You know what I mean by that.
Expecting too much, or
yeah, that. Don't bite off more than you can chew. You gotta, say.
I have big visions.
Yeah, right. Okay. You have a. Your favorite. What's your favorite meal?
We were just having this discussion. My favorite meal.
Yeah.
My favorite meal.
Mm-hmm. Your favorite.
Comfort or food?
It depends on what mood I'm in.
Okay. Right now, what's your favorite meal?
Pumpkin curry.
Well, my wife loves curry. She's been to Thailand. How many years?
Pumpkin curry.
You pump no pumpkin. Okay,
go.
So here's the curry lady.
Every day.
Wow, man. And so you can't drink the whole bowl at once. All right. you got a spoon, you know, just spoon at a time, okay? The same way that's with your our spiritual practice. Just one bite at a time. Just throw it one bite at a time, and the bowl will be empty. So let's take it one. How you say it? Little by little. Poco.
Little by little.
Yeah. Hablas? So, just little by little. It seems like you're trying to get have the whole enchilada. From what you read, what you heard, but it has nothing to do with your karma. Your karma called for you to take this one spoon.
And that's that trust you were just
that's
talking
right.
about.
That's right.
That you had that trust during
right.
that time that
that's
you were.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so now, whenever I go through some or somebody else going through some, I say, just relax. It's going to pass. But this is what you have to go through right now in order to get wisdom. Because the end result for male and female on this path is wisdom. The end result. Wisdom. Because why? As a wise person, you can dispense it to others, to teach it to children, you can teach it to use your wisdom to, because it doesn't make sense, you know, to talk to a young child about living the vastness. I mean, they know about it, but you would break it down to their level. That's wisdom, using wisdom. And so when I was thinking tonight, I said, okay, now, what are we going to talk about tonight? I have no idea what the subject is. My wife had to remind me there was doing none of these things. I said, okay, she said, do you know what you're going to talk about tonight? I said, no. She says, you're none of these things. I said, okay. But that wasn't what was coming up in my heart, because we were going to have another conversation, you know. And so here's the real conversation that we're going to have. Now, the ground is that we're none of those things. We're none of those stories. That's the ground. That's just safe. The ground, this here is you're none of these things. Emptiness. You're not your story. You're not your feelings. You're not your emotions. Okay? You're none of these things. But when you come up off the ground and then you are the story. Then you are the feelings. Then you are the emotion. But if you stop and really ground yourself to your true nature, then you're none of these things. You can take a breath, you can relax, you can give yourself relief, then get back into the game. The key is just to give ourselves relief. This is why we come here. From the story that we tell. As Michael Mead, the mythologist, says, you know, we tell stories to keep the world going. The world doesn't end. Why doesn't it? Because you keep telling a story. You keep telling a story, the world's going to be done. We're done. But you tell a story. You tell a story. And the story keeps you going. You tell a story. Rob's telling a story about fundraising and parenting and bookstores and teas. What does it do? It keeps his business going. The moment he quit telling a story, guess what's going to happen? No more many rivers. Let Jim take over. He started telling a story about it. It's the stories that we tell to keep the world going. So we just learn to be okay with the stories. Know that, oh, this is, I'm telling a story right now. That's who I am. Sometimes it's a happy story. Sometimes it's a joyful story. Sometimes it's a melancholy story. But it's some type of story to keep the world going. Right now you're telling a story, it's causing a lot of angst. But just be with the story. You know, fairy tales, mythics, legends, I mean, you know, there's some gruesome stories, aren't they? They cut kids' heads off and cut the witches off and they burn them up and all that kind of stuff. That's what we do to ourselves. So be okay with the gruesome part. Be okay with the negative part. Just the other day, I was in Oakland, and I was walking down the street. I was buying a part for my wife's car, and I walked around the corner, and I saw this mural. And it was three pictures. A woman, two women, and some wording. And the one jumped out at me was a woman. And I looked at her, and she had these sad eyes. And I said, wow, I'm finally able to put a picture on this sadness. You know, I mean, like, I'm able to put a picture on the sadness. Like being an artist, you know, I'm sad. How does sadness look? I was able to see it on a mural. So I immediately took a picture and I showed it to my wife. She said, ooh. I said, but that's me. That's my sad self. Wow, that's how that looks. And so immediately, guess what I want to do? I want to be positive. Let me find something positive. I want to put a happy face on the sadness. You know, like pasting, you know, here's the sadness. I want to paste a happy face on top of it. A mask. But it's not if I just leave the sadness there and just let it be there. Oh, so my meditation, since I've seen it, is just to be with the sadness. Let's just sit with it. Because guess what? I didn't really know that I was actually basically sad inside. All those years in prison don't make you a happy person. Matter of fact, it makes you very depressed and very sad and melancholy. And I didn't know that until just the other day I said, wow. All those years of living that life, there was a sadness there. Oh, wow. Yes. Go ahead. Oh, I was, which one I wasn't in. I wasn't in. I was in, El Reno, Oklahoma. El Reno.
Oklahoma?
Yeah, yeah. Oklahoma.
Oh, honey, I'm sorry.
Indiana. Yeah, say it again. Pennsylvania. Ooh, that's really rough. Talladega, Alabama.
That was
okay. Missouri, South Dakota, Colorado. Am I missing it?
Who'd you shoot?
That's what I thought. I didn't shoot anybody. I simply cashed checks and robbed banks.
You would have been better off in Chino. I'm sorry, but that's just, oh my gosh.
Chino, I would have been better off in Chino.
I can't believe that you survived.
I did.
Soul intact.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Last Hustle. The book, Testings.
I'll read it.
Get it. That's I'm promoting it. It's a good story. It's really a good story. And it tells you everything. Isn't it, man? You read it, haven't you? My buddy there. I can count on him to show up.
It's a good book.
It's a good book. Kalima, right?
Very good.
Okay. Good. Kalima, tell me... Just tell me anything. Yeah.
Something I read this morning was I remember now that wasn't the negative, but the relative.
Okay.
The relative is God's greatest gift to itself. It's our greatest gift to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to have that relativity, to have that pain and that sorrow and that you know, even your life, you know, that you almost had to have that so you could come to the other side.
That's right, yes, right.
Otherwise, you know, if you had just another life,
but
you would kind of da da da, right?
Yeah, right.
So it's and to be grateful for that. You know,
I'm very
really
grateful.
Because it's the greatest gift,
that's
the relativity.
That's right. And how does it show up in your life?
Oh, even with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's so different and has their own story and their own life and their own dramas and sometimes I have a hard time with people and their stories and dramas. I like to spend a lot of time alone.
Okay.
In my garden.
Okay.
But it does help me to see the other side, to have a balance so you can see the love because you see the pain, the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And often I'm even grateful that people are living their lives of fear and anger, so I don't have to do that. I can just see it, and relatively, what's the word? I can
know the bliss without just being lost in it.
That's
know?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes it is hard to.
What is your practice?
Being present.
Mm-hmm.
I meditate.
Okay.
I
how
meditate
often?
And I dance a lot.
How often do you dance and meditate?
I meditate at least once a day.
Okay, how often do you dance?
Strictly. What's that?
Dance.
At least 3 times a week.
Well, where do you dance at?
There's lots of places in Sebastopol to dance.
No.
Oh, yeah.
What time?
Every day.
Almost every day.
No!
Sunday morning, 90 people come and dance.
What?
The church is beautiful. Yeah, really sweet.
Sunday morning, 90 people come.
10 and o'clock. 10 to 12.
10 to 12.
Yeah.
At Weishman Hall.
Weishman Hall.
Soul Motion.
Soul. Oh, Ben Marty's work.
Yeah, exactly.
Here.
Oh, yeah.
Who
for
teaches?
Years and years.
Sunday, Tuesday night, there's another one. Wednesday night, there's another one.
Okay, I'll tell you, which
Friday
one is the
night,
best one? Which
Friday
one is the
night?
Best one?
Well, for Soul Motion. Sunday morning is quite special.
It's quite special. Sunday morning.
Yeah.
The woman that teaches it is. Learned from Vin.
She's very close to them. Yeah.
Who? What's her name?
To Vin Marti. Her name? Oh, Zusa Engler.
Zusa.
Yeah.
Zusa. So she's teaches up here.
Mm-hmm.
I know Zusa.
Yeah.
It's
a really
10 to noon.
Yeah. I like the practice because you can be with people in a totally open, loving thing and not have to hear their stories and their dramas and their stuff. They're just being present. And that's
at Weishman Hall. What's it at?
Right
next
to the
community
center.
Next to community center, yeah.
The community
square
center.
Dance hall is up there, yeah.
So it's called Weishman Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Weisseman.
Weisseman.
At the end of Morris Street, right?
Yeah,
at the end
yeah.
of Morris.
Weishman. Okay. Yeah.
I can tell you where it is later.
Okay, we need to go there.
And I garden. That's my other.
Oh, the show of the meditation. Oh, okay. So you have a pretty fun life.
She's pretty fun to hang out with.
See, I can see that. Cause she gonna take a dance on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You sleep Saturday and come back Sunday. You're working in the garden Saturday, then you come back Sunday and start all over again Monday, huh? Okay, good. It's so funny that, you know, I was coming around the corner, I said, those are dancers. You know, I just know that, you know, all we do is a dancer. And I did a lot of ecstatic dance, and I tried to do a sweat to prayer, ecstatic dance, then tango, and salsa, and whatever else dance I've done in my life, you know. So now I'm into more, I haven't done Soul Motion as a regular thing. So we may check it out just to see how we fit into that. And we're close right here at Sonoma, so it's only, what, 30 minutes to get here. We might check that out on Sunday morning, as opposed to yoga. You know. Do something together. You know. My wife keeps saying, when are we going to dance? When are we going to dance? I said, well, Sunday. But it's going to be so beautiful this weekend, I don't know if I want to be inside.
Right.
So
Saturday nights are fun, too, and just kind of more, a little more free.
Saturday nights?
I mean, sorry, Friday nights.
Friday.
Every Friday night, there's a dance over there, too.
Oh, it is?
Ecstatic. That's ecstatic.
That's ecstatic. But what about sweat?
The third Friday is the sweat.
Okay, so ecstatic dance is more Friday.
Yeah, it's not really ecstatic dance. You can't because
that's true.
So we'll look at maybe Sunday morning.
It's all a story.
That's awesome. God, there she goes. She's getting good. Oh, let this go for a minute. You want more of my story? Let me tell you more of my story. As a young man, I grew up in the inner city, and I kept robbing and taking. Pretty soon, they kept letting me in and out of prison. And all those years of going to prison, I became a model prisoner. I was a perfect prisoner in jail. I didn't drink, I didn't smoke, I did smoke cigarettes, but I didn't do anything to violate the law of the roots. And I would get through prison, get right back out, and commit crimes, and go back to prison, become a model prison, then get back out. It was just a revolving door. And I started seeing what happened. I started seeing my other inmates dying, falling like flies, hanging themselves, and having heart attacks. You know, we all was the same age. We kind of like came up to prison. You're like, okay, these guys are dying. We're in our 40s now. This doesn't look good. I said, I got to get out of this. I got to get out of this place. I got to get out.
Which place?
That was the prison at that time was Elrin. Okay, the federal government gave me 40 years for writing bad checks. And so back then, that was 1982, I had to do 10 years before I could see the parole board. And that's when I got serious about life. Because the Department of Justice was serious about burying me. Mm-hmm. So I better take this as serious as they're taking it. No, they're serious about this. And I went to federal prison, and what I learned about federal prison, and what I learned, I've learned about this political system, is that the federal government is not what you think it is. And I thought the federal government, even though I was a criminal, was this system that had my interest, my best interest at heart. I mean, a criminal thinking that, oh, they like me. I just robbed the banks and just shot somebody, but they like me. So they're going to treat me right. And so what happened was, once I got to federal prison, inmates started saying, Kenny, you got nothing coming from the federal government. Legally, you got nothing coming. Financially, you got nothing coming. You're going to do your time. You're not going to get out earlier. You got nothing coming. And so I couldn't really wrap my head around what they meant by you got nothing coming. I would go to my case manager, I would go to my attorneys, I would go to these people, and they would say, congressmen, senators. Then it slowly dawned on me, like one spoon at a time. Like, I ain't got, one spoon of, you ain't got nothing coming. I kept saying, I ain't got nothing coming. And I realized I didn't have anything coming from the federal government. Once I realized that the federal government did not care anything about me, I took all my attention away from the outside world and turned it on the inside world. I started looking inside of myself. I actually quit looking out and started looking in. That's how I started doing yoga, meditation, astral projection. I started playing with my mind, praying, affirmations. I started working with myself because I realized this system doesn't care anything about me. I got to start caring about myself. And the moment I made the decision, my life changed for the better. Once I made the decision, consciousness starts preparing a divine meeting for me and Ganji to have. So, the moment you decide that you're going to take your attention off the outside world, off the outside world, off the outside world, off your problems and your situations, and turn it up on you, guess what happened? Consciousness started divide, creating a guru to come into your life to point you to itself. I like the way she's looking at. So, who doesn't understand? Who? I make sure everybody understands what I'm talking about. Yeah. Jim? You understand it?
Yes.
Could you translate it for me? From your own experience.
When you're looking out, mm-hmm. like you're filling your life with all this furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you let that go, mm-hmm. it's the room becomes spacious.
Mm-hmm.
And something can come in.
Yes. Because
so
it's not full anymore.
It's not full anymore.
The universe does not like a vacuum.
Right.
It has to fill it up with something.
You have to create that space.
That's right,
the
sacred space.
Appear.
That's right, that's right, that's right.
And the guru is that space.
That's right. Oh, man. Oh, shit. I better sit down. I think we got the wrong person in the chair tonight, man. Say it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I had the experience
mm-hmm.
of meeting someone
mm-hmm.
who knew all my faults
mm-hmm.
and everything that was wrong with me
right.
and didn't care
mm-hmm.
you know, like about
mm-hmm.
that at all. That was it, totally uninterested in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that spaciousness.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Gave you the space to be whatever.
Right.
And it's okay. Just like I was saying, like Ganga, she gave me the space to be whatever. She said, oh, don't suffer no more. And we have spiritual friends. Let's talk about spiritual friends.
Oh, God.
And what do our spiritual friends do? Okay, since I hit a nerve.
You know what my spiritual friends do?
What?
They lose 65 pounds, they become totally vegan,
right.
and then they disappear into the Los Gatos Mountains. And they run around naked with a whole bunch of really trippy, useless people that aren't actually contributing to their life, and then they have horrible accidents, and now they're my best friend is trying to stay out of big time trouble, the kind of trouble that you were talking about.
Right.
She's afraid she's going to be in prison for her life, and I'm like, it's not your fault, it was an accident.
Right.
But she's been very, she's been having a lot more fun than I have in the last 10 years. I've had no fun whatsoever. I've had no trouble at all. She is skinny and vegan and totally like grounded to the earth, and she's just like, I'm afraid my life is over. And I'm just, how do you find the place in the middle where between having fat and just fat and boring or just crazy and vegan and skinny?
Right.
Where's the middle?
Okay, there it is. You just pointed to it. You just did it. You said right. You just said it. Here's the fat.
I'm fat.
Okay.
And boring.
Okay, and here's skinny and happy.
Crazy and skinny and just wild and lots of sex.
Okay.
I've been having lots of sex. Okay. I've been like working for $15 a day in shifts. I'm not having her life. Okay. She's in huge trouble.
Well, I don't think you want
I'm
the trouble.
Not in any trouble.
You don't want the trouble. That's why you have a very boring life, because sometimes.
I'm in trouble because my dogs are in the car and my family's wondering where are the dogs. You know, I need to get them home.
Mm.
I don't care. I'm staying here until we're done.
Oh, I love it. And you will discover the middle.
No.
Yes. Well,
no,
you don't have to. It's going to find you. It's going to find you. Why? Because you want it. I wanted freedom. Jim, come here one more time.
Malika.
Malika wanted something. We all want something. And the universe, which hates a vacuum, gives you that. This is your next in the middle. You say, oh, I can be fat and skinny, or I can be fat, I can be vegan, I can be whatever. But none of that matters. That's not you. That's not the true you. The true you is okay with you being fat. The true you is okay with you being vegan. The true you. It's okay with you having the dogs in the car, okay with your family wondering where you are. It's okay you say, I'm not leaving here until it's over with. The true you is okay with all of that.
It's all these other voices.
Hmm?
It's all these other voices.
The voices come the moment we sit and be quiet. What happens? Really be quiet. What happens? Right. The moment you get The moment you get still, then what do you start? You start. Then you can really hear the voices. When I'm talking, can y'all hear the voices? No. The moment I shut my big trap. And then, but you keep sitting with. Pretty soon, they're not paying attention to me. And pretty soon get slow. And it's just giving ourselves relief. It feels so good, don't when we just drop, doesn't it? Like, I've been holding up all this into my head here. Yes.
I hear the voices.
You hear voices?
When everything's quiet,
right.
And I'm alone.
Right. What do you have? What do you have?
Huh?
What do you have?
Silence. You have to turn on the TV to have any noise at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just me. If I don't turn on the TV, total silence.
And so why you turn the TV on?
To feel like I have company.
Just feel but you don't need any company in a sense.
I live alone.
Yes.
I have children. Good dog. And three cats and three birds.
Man!
And still not enough cacophony to keep me company.
Wow! That's absolutely amazing.
Do you have pets?
Yeah.
Wow.
Two kitty cats.
They are very silent, aren't they? Yeah, like you. So tell me, so you say you got to turn, you have to create noise.
No, what I'm saying is. My surroundings, I worry so much about what other people think about me. But that's the constant chatter and the worry that's
right
away. And that.
And
but when I'm alone, I don't have to worry about it. I'm in my safe zone. And that's so I kind of just want to be a hermit.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to be.
Right. Of course you would. Of course. And how does it feel to be a hermit? There you go. Stay, remain a hermit.
But you have to make a living.
Well, yeah, you go out and make a living, come back and be a hermit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can be a hermit in your own mind. And a hermit is just simply one that retreats. So you can retreat in the midst of all of this. What I'm saying, in the midst of the cacophony, you can retreat. The birds and the cats and the dogs are going off, but yet you can reach, and the TV, and you can yet.
I'm the one that has all of that.
I know, and that's what. And I'm saying, and in the midst of that, you can retreat. That's right.
Lack of activity.
Right.
Frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy the quiet and the peacefulness. Well, I do, but I'm just saying it's stress-free.
Stress-free.
It's not that I don't want to be around people.
Right.
It's just hard.
Hard being around people.
I guess it's my story. People are hard, right?
Yes, people are hard. People are extremely hard. And the harder people are, it's because of the more they tell the stories. And 90% of people we live around, what they're telling stories all the time. To keep this world going. Keep politics going, and keep religion going, and keep business going. And so we're a part of that. And so we get caught up in this too. But the beauty of us is that we can let the story go. We can create this sacred space, as Jim speaks about, and allow the guru to come in, or as you say, to realize that the guru is there. The hardest thing for me, after all those years of being in prison, it was like this all the time. It was like this all the time. What I mean, like this. People was always in my face all the time. I was always in somebody's face. It was like this all the time. I couldn't go out in the woods, or I couldn't go to the top of Mount Diablo or Yosemite or none of that. This was it. All the time. 1,000 inmates, we in each other's face. And so now that I'm not in that environment, I'm home, I'll tell my wife the other day, I said, you know, it is so fucking hard for me just to say I'm not going anywhere today. Because I'm so used to being in people's face, or people being in my face, like, what is be sitting home alone, doing absolutely nothing? That's so, like, contrary to my nature almost. I feel like I got to be out doing something, making something happen. Or I don't feel like I'm useful.
I got a story line. Mm. I got a story line.
Go ahead.
Like what you just said.
Yeah.
No, I don't even need to tell it. You already said it.
Okay. It's the same story line.
Well, it's the story line of if I'm not doing something, I don't feel complete.
Yeah, you don't feel complete.
Yeah.
Yes,
and I love that during the day, often I'm alone, or I'm working by myself, and I go in and out of a kind of meditation
mm-hmm,
space.
Mm-hmm.
I go to that empty,
mm-hmm.
spacious place. I visit it often.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of go in and out of
mm-hmm.
that all day because it's a relief to sit there
right.
And,
right.
or just to be there
right.
in my mind,
right.
not attached to this idea that I have,
to do
something.
Something. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
To make it work. Keep it going.
Yeah, keep the storyline going.
Well,
to
make
it.
A living. With me, it's like so many years. I would get up in the morning with my gun, my knife, my whatever it was I was doing that I had at that time, my pen, write checks, whatever. I would get out and go out in the world, make something happen.
Yeah.
So now, I have discovered through this slowly one spoon at a time of wisdom that if I just sit here, don't move, for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, something's going to come to me. Just remain empty. What I'm looking for is going to come. And I have proven it over and over again, yet I won't trust it implicitly or explicitly. You know? I won't trust it completely. Because I haven't really, like you say, embodied, I like this word, embodied it, you know. I haven't embodied that teaching, that truth.
It's like
you know
it's true.
True. You know it's true.
It's
you know it's true.
I mean, the whole thing about, you know, you can't love others until you love yourself.
Right.
But what that really means.
Right.
You know, to really embrace.
Just right.
And be okay with.
And be that.
All of it.
Right. That's the practice, that's the teaching,
and
that's the work.
And you're
free. Yes, and you're free, that's true. That's right. And my wife always says, you and this money thing. And today I went to an art exhibit. Guess what the art piece I was attracted to? A money symbol. A guy did a cross. And it was made out of real money. And guess what I took a picture of? It was all this other art there. Great stuff. And I walked over and the guy says, Kenny, how you doing? I want to meet Javier. And this is his work. Snack him. And we took a picture. What? I didn't take a picture of nothing else. It was this money thing. And so I said, oh boy, here I go again. So, you know, it's I agree with you that it's a practice that I'm learning to develop or work with in order to be okay with this money thing. I was raised poor. I never, ever, 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 ever saw a lot of money in my household. Poverty was everywhere I looked. You know, it wasn't like now in Marin, you know, I mean, I walked down the street, I mean, I drive down the street today, I saw a bunch of school kids walking in Marin Academy, walking toward Marin Academy. I said, now every one of those daggone kids probably got a super rich family, wealthy family, you know what I mean? BMWs, Jaguars, Porsches, and everything. I said, the least concern, maybe, hopefully, I think, is money. But I just saw how they were raised in prosperity and luxury, and they were raised in it. And as opposed to me, I was raised in poverty. So I would always be one to chase thinking that the kid going to Marin Academy got it better than me, because why? Well, they got a $5 million home. They got a dad just bought a brand new Porsche. Yeah.
How do we not be angry about that?
Oh!
Please tell me how to not be pissed off about all these young children, these children that aren't even 21 yet, that are driving $35,000 cars, and they don't even think twice about having a $400 cell phone, and I am seriously not doing that well.
You're not doing that one well.
Tell me how to not be angry, please. How do I be a better person? And how do I be zen? And how do I just go, okay, it's okay, it's okay. Because they're not going to be happier than me.
They're not necessarily happy at all.
No, right, that was our projection. Yeah. That was my projection onto those kids. Like, well, they're happy, but that's, of course, we know better than that. But that was my projection, that they're happy, they're doing great, because why? The mom bought them the car, and whatever. And I was thinking, like, wow, not being them and being me, here we are again. Do I want to be them? Do I want to be me? So if I'm chasing this dollar, it's not like I'm not happy with my situation, circumstances as they are.
And you're not coming anywhere close to that, and then these young people, where it's just given to them, they look at you like you're just an old lady. You're just an old stinky old lady that is not even interesting. I'm only 46 years old, and I'm already invisible.
How old are you?
46. I'm having a major midlife crisis right now. Crisis of faith, soul, spirit, hope.
Celebrate that.
I'm really seriously trying to find a reason to keep on holding on.
Right.
But I've never been through what you've been through, okay? I grew up here.
Oh, you grew up at Marin?
Well, no, just here.
I mean, well, Bay Area, I'm sorry. I think about the Bay Area as Marin.
Poor hippie parents, Goodwill clothes, you know. Never been abused, never been neglected, always been loved. Still not really satisfied with my life.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. And this
and
is.
I think it's my problem. I suck, you know.
Well, you probably do, but. You probably do.
I do.
Yeah, yeah, well, you probably do suck at it, you know. And I sucked at my life. That's why I changed. That's why I actually, you know, said, okay, this is not working. As a criminal, I suck. This is not working, because why do I suck? Well, I've done over 20 years in prison, and I have not achieved my objective, so this sucks. I have to change. I have to take action. And the one action I took was to turn my attention more inward. Always, always. And you have a book called Zen. Do you have the book Beginners?
Zen Mind,
Beginner's Mind. You have it by Suzuki Roshi. That's a good one. I don't know why that came up.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a good one, huh? I think that would be a good one.
How do we find happiness for no reason?
Start where you are.
When you got no reason to be happy. How do you decide I'm going to be happy?
Okay. And what I'm saying is, what came up out of the blue is That book.
Which is?
Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind.
Suzuki Roshi.
Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind.
Did you read it?
Oh, yeah. I haven't practiced, I studied, I read it, and that really helps. Because it brings us back to the basics. And we never get away from the basics. You never get away from what the Buddha say, letting the story go. You never get away from that. I mean, even now when I'm going through a lot of stuff, like, okay, I'm done. Let go. Forget it. As soon as I do that, a ground of spaciousness opens up. When I'm dancing, I love to go dancing because no matter what the dance is, once you really get into it and you're totally just there and you forget all your troubles and take your shoes off, put the dance shoes on, and just really get into the dance. And you see that you're in your head and, okay, I gotta let this go. And then pretty soon, boom. That's what I love about it. So we don't have to sit here in order to let go. It can happen all kind of ways. We're just discussing and talking about it today, but who knows, you go home, whatever, might be TV, or might not be looking at TV, and the ground, spaciousness appears. That's why she's frustrated, because she has this spaciousness is pushing, trying to come through, trying to find a portal to come through. That's why the frustration. The more we look at our spiritual, the more we really stay close to our, watch ourselves, use us as a laboratory, just really watch ourselves, then the more we start understanding the spiritual truths and spiritual teachings. The more we do that, use us as a laboratory, then you start saying, I'm always watching me, I'm always studying me. Which makes me understand you. Because I realize you're one. There's no difference. You just happen to be in a female body, happen to be in a male body, but that which embodies you and embodies me is the same. And it's not touched by anything that this body does. It experiences it and everything, but it's not touched by it. And what I mean by touch is contaminated. it's not going to get cancer, yet it experiences cancer. Because why? It senses all, it is all, and it takes and it knows all, and it experiences everything, but it's not that. And how do we know that? We stop, take deep breaths, let go, and we touch this powerful place within ourselves, this knowing place, this place of assurity, of guarantee that all is well, beyond a doubt. Once we touch that, then we know. We become the knower. Where did you grow in your garden?
What
did you grow in your garden?
All kinds of things.
How's your garden grow?
Wildly. So yeah, mix of cultivated and wild growing things that I want to grow wild.
Mm.
A lot of the wild things grow.
Mm.
Yeah, I heard that,
like, whatever grows around you, your body needs that,
mm-hmm.
You know, milk thistle and whatever, you know,
grass.
Grass, I like that. Okay.
I gotta get the doggies home.
Okay.
I have had a wonderful time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
No resistance. Don't resist what is.
Don't resist.
It's all good.
Okay. So your garden is grows.
I work it a lot.
You work it a lot.
But yeah, but it looks very wild.
Not the rose.
I have all kinds of berries and fruits and all kinds of things growing.
Good.
I like to spend my time in quiet outside in nature. That's a good way to do it.
Just that.
I feel like I get something done.
Whereas,
you know, our society is so raised on do.
Well, yeah, this America is a, on the Enneagram, I don't know anything about Enneagram, but on the Enneagram, Eli Jackson Barrett says that America is a three culture. And that, okay, in the three culture is, so I guess I'll give you an example. Who all knows Tony Robbins? Deepak
mm-hmm.
Chopra.
The perfect three.
Yeah, these are threes.
Yeah.
They do. And America is a three country. It's three culture. Do. Go. Cheat. At the expense of everything, friendship and everything. We're image conscious. Yeah. And so that's why we get caught up in it. That's why, you know, we all get caught up. I gotta do something. I gotta achieve something. I mean, I can't just sit here and meditate and, you know. But some of the greatest teachers, what did they do? Ramana Maharshi or whatever, they sat and they didn't move. And the world came to them. So they totally disproved that theory. We don't have to, you know. But then India is a nine culture, so that's what nines do. Shit. See, he's raised in the right. And Ramana was a nine, so it's perfect for him. You know, but each culture has this overlay, you know. But it even though it's a three culture and the end of the nine and on, at the base of it is this love. The foundation, again, is this love, is this bliss, is this joy, is this emptiness. That's the base, the foundation. And we operate from that, go and do and come back, be still, but we come back to the ground. of sitting. And so you go back to the ground. This, I'm in the garden, this is my ground. Me, I get up in the morning, I go to my altar, I do light my incense, I do my meditation. That gets me, that's my ground. That's my ground. That's my garden. I'm tending my garden. If I don't do that for two or three days, I get kind of, I can see I'm getting kind of, I'm really into the up here, sort of stop, bring the energy down. And this does it also. This grounds me. Having talks, this grounds me. And may the merit of our meeting tonight be of benefit specifically to the men that we're going to talk to, I'm going to talk to tomorrow. Because they don't have, they have the luxury of putting our shoes on, walking out the door, getting in the car, and going home. They don't have that luxury of going home, being with the cats, and turn on TV, whatever. They don't have that luxury. They just don't have the luxury. And so the merit of this meeting, may the merit of this meeting go with us and go bless those men. Because not only are you blessing the men, you're blessing their families. And you're blessing their loved ones and you're blessing society. Once I had my awakening, my whole family became blessed. Except my daughter. She got pissed. Because, you know, I came out of prison and I immediately came west. I left my daughter. You know, she had seen me all her life. Then I get out, I hang out about a year, then I take off. So there's always been this, you know, you're not a good father. And I have to live with that. Because on one end, I am her father. Biologically, I am her father. She came through me. But she is not my daughter. She is consciousness' daughter. Mm-hmm. Consciousness knows what it wants to do with her and with me. I serve that which came and got me out of prison, set me down here and says, this is what I want you to do. No matter what anybody else says, this is what I want you to do. I follow that voice. Sometimes it's not easy because the relative, who spoke of relative, the relative juxtaposition of my daughter and my mother and all them saying things to me caused me to have some type of reaction if I identify with the story that they're saying who I am. My daughter says, you're my dad? I say, oh yeah, I am your dad. Then guess what? We have agreed that I'm my dad. So according to that storyline, guess what? I'm supposed to do certain things. If I don't do certain things, I'm what? A good father or a bad father? And I can't win. I have yet to win with her. Why? Can you win with the mind? No, you can't. I can't win with that mind. There's no way I can win. It's a lose-lose situation. There's no way I can win with that mind. I've tried. I spent money. I did everything trying to satisfy her mind. Guess what? I can't do it. It's endless. So we hear the wisdom again. Once you have the wisdom knowing, oh, this is my daughter, this is my son, this is my child, this is my father, this is my mother, whatever, and they're telling a story about me. And this story is causing happiness, joy, sadness. If I buy into the story, then guess what? I'm going to experience the ups and the roller coaster of that relationship, of that storyline. So I decide not to buy into the storyline, and I see when it comes up, I let it go. Come up, I let it go. Because why? I follow that which came and got me. Because it knows where it wants me to be, because why? It came and got me out of prison. It says, okay, I don't want you in jail no more. Whew, thank you, man. Her, y'all, whoever, whatever. Thank y'all. Thank it, whatever. Thank you. I don't know. God could be many. Who knows? I mean, God doesn't have to be one. That could be two. That could be many.
A committee.
God could be a committee. Who said God has to be just one? It's one person. We're just talking outside. We're just thinking outside the box here, you know. I like to think outside the box sometimes. Like I tell my wife, I said, I want to think original thought. Something new. I want to have a new thought. So guess what? Something was trying to come through. Something was trying to come through because it says, I'm trying to break through. I said, what's trying to come through? And just the other day, that's why I saw that picture. Wow. This is how your sadness look inside of you, Kenny. Oh, wow. Okay, got it. Because something was trying to come through and it came through. Oh, okay. So whenever something's kind of come through, you're like, something's not right here. I feel like I need to be, something is trying to come through. Mm-hmm. When I wrote that book, I was giving interviews to an older woman in Sonoma. She was about 70 years old. And so she was interviewing me. I said, yeah, and I pimped this and I robbed this. And she said, she called me back after the interview. She says, Kenny, you kind of disturbed me talking about the streets and the women and the stuff. So I called Michael Mead. I said, man, the woman come interview me about my life. Did I tell her about my life? She get upset. He says, something's trying to come through. And we'll come with the book to get it out. I got it out. It's in the book. Done. So I don't have to burden interviewers or women with that part of me that was a part of my life. But it wanted to come through. It wanted to get out. And I gave it life. I gave it form. Now people say, oh, I did that. You know, I understand. I can relate to that. Yeah, but I kept going. And I have the awakening.
Thank you for saying that, something wanting to come through.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a conception experience,
mm-hmm.
and allegorically writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a poem about that the other day.
Mm.
It's like, yeah, something wants to come through, something, I'm very restless.
Mm-hmm.
I was very restless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And not until... I just made a decision that I can't not write.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
Yeah, so that is the conception part.
Right.
And then the gestation and
mm-hmm.
all the rest of it.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are you going to talk about when you come in August?
Well, I was hoping maybe I could get you to talk, because it's something interesting. No, I'm going to talk about ways to feel good in the body,
mm-hmm.
a special way to achieve body cleansing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Through a spiritual
mm-hmm.
Procedure
mm-hmm.
that I invented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So please come.
Okay.
Get clean.
Oh, right. I'm on his mailing list, so who knows? I might be speaking in the week ahead of time, a week after, you know. Like. First of all, I want to thank everybody for coming. I want to thank Rob again for allowing me to come and ramble on about whatever. And what time? Am I on?
You are right on time.
Right on time.
Okay. So now I'm gonna say namaste. I gotta get a hug from everybody. Then Rob's gonna say his thing.
Namaste. And thank you all for coming tonight. In a moment, there will be a magical appearance little bowl over there. That will be a place where you can offer dana, the Buddhist word for donation, and we share that with our speakers to further their work, so he can take that down and drive down to San Bruno.
I will actually buy
gas
to go to San Bruno and say, hey,
that's
guys,
right.
You're free.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we retain
and
the other.
She'll tell you.
That's right.
And just she'll tell you how to embody it.
So then we keep the other half so we can keep doing
this
sort of thing.
This
thing here. Mm. And check out this awesome book and other.
Yes.
And actually, there's some. DVDs, CDs, or whatever.
Wow, Lord have mercy.
DVDs.
I need to have one of those things. Golly.
Our speaker tonight, so you can check those out, and other stuff by Gangaji and his teacher. And also, by all means, take stuff for the Festival of Conscious Parenting fundraiser by the door there. And thank you again for coming tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Always a joy to be here.